I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience, a podcast where dads can connect and openly share a story.
In this episode, we talk to Dr. Adam Rubin about voice health and awareness, as well as raising teenagers. And as always, we finish off the episode by asking Dr. Rubin about his three favorite films he's most excited to share with his children. Welcome to The Dad Experience. Got a special episode here for you all today. Very, very excited. A very good friend and of mine that has taken great care of me over the last few years, that I guess I should say more than three, I guess. And just so happy to have him on. I know he's a great father and as well as a great doctor. So today we have with us Dr. Adam Rubin, a laryngologist, Director of Lakeshore Professional Voice Center and Vice President of Lakeshore Ear, Nose, and Throat in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. He is also a clinical professor at Michigan State University, assistant professor at Oakland University, William Beaumont School of Medicine. So, Dr. Rubin, thank you for being here and taking your time out to join us today.
Oh, it's a treat. I'm always happy to talk to you.
Thank you. So, you know, we always like to start our show. It's kind of our thing is to just say, who do you live with at home? And what is your family? Who is your family made up of?
Well, I live with my wife, Rebecca, who's an orthodontist out in West Bloomfield. Okay. Lash Root Orthodontics. I live with my two kids. I have a 15-year-old daughter, Whitney, and a 12-year-old, soon to be 13-year-old son, Noah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, my favorite is our 2-year-old cockapoo.
All right. So the kids know that
no, they get it. They get it. They understand.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, well, this is a first for us, too, because most of the guests we've had on have had younger children, either elementary school and younger. So yes. this will be great for us to talk to you and kind of get a little bit more detail for our listeners that have some older children at home.
Yeah, tell those folks that if they have never heard, it goes by very fast.
Yeah, yeah. I'm noticing that.
Don't blink, right.
It's funny because today I took my daughter to daycare just so I could record, you know, a couple episodes, get some things done around the house. And because I'm off this week from school, and when I took her, I was like, man, am I really doing the right thing? I wanted to snatch her up and take her home. And I came home after I'd ran a couple errands. I'm like, oh, it's quiet in here. This is really strange. So, yeah, it has been going by fast. Like, this week blew by, and then the weeks blow by. And
you know, every week goes a little faster.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So, well, that's great. So, I guess to start things off, what have you found the most difficult? So, your daughter's in high school, right? And yep, your son's yep. Middle school? Or
yes. Yeah, okay. Middle school.
Eighth grade or seventh?
He's in seventh.
Seventh grade. That's what I thought. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it's seventh or eighth. So yeah. What's the biggest difference that you find when the children transition from like being, you know, elementary aged, infancy to middle school and then maybe even high school? I'm assuming there's even a bigger change.
Sure. That's a good question. I mean, well, obviously their workload becomes a lot heavier. Their own stressors become a lot heavier. They go through a lot of changes, obviously physically and emotionally. I think probably actually the biggest change, and it's that change from middle school to high school, and now I'm seeing this through my daughter. So things might be different for girls and boys. I don't know, but you know, things get a little, people get a little more cliquey. Friends change. All of a sudden, you know, people you thought you were good friends with, all of a sudden you feel a little bit out of the loop with them. And, you know, it's, I think you find who you're more likely to find who your lifelong, you know, friends are going to be.
The people yeah.
you count on. So, you know, it's hard to watch that. Mm-hmm. And to try to instill into your kids that, listen, you know, you don't need to be friends with, you know, the best friends with everybody. You need a few good core network of friends that you can really depend upon. And, you know, people show their true colors and everybody's going through challenging times or even, you know, so the people that all of a sudden you feel distant to, maybe it's just that moment in their life, they're going through something where they're trying to find themselves and figure it out. So if that makes sense, I think that's probably the biggest challenge.
No, yeah, it does. And how, I mean, have you found any one thing, and I'm my guess is, and this is going to be a no answer, and it's not really a yes or no answer, and it's every situation is probably different, but have you found one thing that seems to work when, you know, your daughter comes home and let's say that, you know, something at school happened, or she is becoming more distant from a friend because those friends are making different decisions or whatever. Right. How do you handle that? How do you get to the core and find out the root of the problem? You know, I'm assuming children in high school, I do teach high school, but I'm assuming they don't always want to come home and say, this is X, Y, and Z that's going on at school, and this is why I feel this way. So how do you get to the bottom of it so you can help resolve maybe a problem or an issue?
Well, first of all, let me just preface this by saying, I don't know that I'm the perfect dad by any sense of the definition. I try my best. I think the most important thing is just listening. Mm-hmm. Let them express their feelings. And, you know, I always try to relate it to things I went through in life. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. You try to legitimize their feelings and let them know it's normal. And fortunately, my daughter's got a really good head on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. She's always been precocious and smart and very good values. And she's making a lot of good decisions. And honestly, she's doing it on her own, you know. So it's been easy for me from that perspective. But on the other hand, she's also, you know, a sensitive young lady. But I think the whole thing's actually been a real growing experience. And it's coming around. Things, you know, again, it seems like the friend group changes. You know, mm-hmm. But she's doing well. She really is. She's just in that social scheme and she makes good decisions. So I think as parents, maybe we get some credit for that, but I think a lot just was good luck.
Well, they have to learn it and see it from example, I really think. Yes. And I see that at school all the time. They have to learn it and they have to know what is morally the right thing to ask. So yes, it definitely, I think it does come from parents, you know, ultimately it really has to, because they have to learn the behavior somewhere. So,
and I will tell you something else. We let her ask our kids, ask any questions. I mean, we're very open with that. We don't, I feel like if they can't ask things at home, they're going to go find it somewhere else, whether it's on the internet or something like that. And they may be led down the wrong path.
No, that's a really great answer, like something for us to know and something for I think dads to know. I being an open book, you know, I never would have thought of that, and I haven't hit that point yet because they're not at that point yet, but that's something very interesting to think about, and having that safe environment, because from an education standpoint, I know that having a safe environment where kids can feel comfortable and be able to do things without being judged is a much more successful learning environment than it is where things are so closed off.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now you have a daughter and a son. So what is it? Is it a huge difference between the two?
Oh my God. Massive. Well, they're both amazing kids. They really are. I feel very lucky and blessed. You know, my daughter is very organized, somewhat compulsive. You know, comes home, gets her work done. We don't have to worry about a thing. In fact, you know, if anything, we pull her the other way. my son, very bright kid, great kid, social, you know, good student, very good student. But, you know, sometimes it'll be 9 o'clock at night. We'll say, so did you get your homework done? He's like, oh, wait, let me just check the, what's it called? They put it all on the internet.
The Power School.
Portal. And, oh, shoot, I have a test tomorrow. So. And then he does great, but it's kind of funny, you know, we feel sometimes we have to make sure he came home with his head on his shoulders, you know, but he's actually getting a lot better too. And it's not totally fair because there's that adjustment from elementary school to middle school. That's a big adjustment as well.
Right.
So, but, he's a little more laid back. That's the best way to put it.
Where your kids go to school, is it a middle school or is it junior high? So do they go
middle?
So they start in sixth grade. Okay. Yeah. It was strange for me going into that and I think things have changed since even I was in school, but it was a middle school situation or a junior high school when I was in school. So a sixth grade was an elementary and then seventh was junior high. So when I even started teaching, it was a little bit of a different change for me.
Yeah.
Which I think the middle school idea is better, in my perspective. But what do I know?
I will tell you that I was the first sixth grade in middle school in my when I went to school. That was we were the transition year, the change year. That was outside of Philadelphia. So yeah. I think it's interesting to watch. I think kids are a lot nicer, it seems to me, in middle school. Middle school was tough for me, and I was just losing my hair then. It was not a time to be different. Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting to see. I've seen it with my daughter and my son, that I think the kids are a lot more accepting and supportive of that kind of stuff. I don't see as much teasing or as much things like that, at least in where they are in school. So
now, do you think that's less because more things are online for kids?
Yeah, probably. I think there's more exposure to, you know, whether it's kids who look different or kids with disabilities or, you know, kids with autism. I mean, there's great integration, and my kids love working with special needs kids and autistic and there's been great integration into the school. So that's kind of nice to see.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Because that's the thing that I always see is you don't see as much face to face anymore, but you see a lot and hear a lot that there's bullying online and there's always something happening. So how, you know, kind of maybe transitioning into this, how do you help manage and stay monitoring your children's online time or the Facebook or, you know, whatever's new, Instagram or Snapchat? How do you know or help with them in dealing with those situations?
Well, we're very verbal about, you know, what's smart and what's not smart to post online. And again, we've been very lucky with our kids, you know, because they'll tell us about things that have been posted online that they know shouldn't have been. We've been very lucky with that. So I honestly, at this point, feel comfortable that I'm going to be smart, you know, with those decisions. And again, I really think it comes down to not trying to protect your kids from, because you don't think they're old enough to talk about whatever subject it is, whether it's sex or drugs or anything like that. You know, they're gonna see it. They're gonna find it. I mean, you know, all the shows on Netflix or the internet, anything. So we're very open with discussion with that. Let them ask whatever they want, and I think that helps.
Yeah, and I'm assuming you keep them involved, or they're involved in school, or are they involved in activities outside of the house?
They're very busy. They both play tennis as a major sport. My son plays other sports as well, but they take tennis lessons. They both play two instruments, so piano and drums for my son, piano and clarinet for my daughter.
That's good. That's good. So you being in the medical field, and I'm sure you're a busy guy, and most parents are, just in general, how do you manage getting to those band concerts or getting to the tennis matches and having long hours? And really, sometimes I'm assuming you don't always know maybe your schedule because of surgeries or whatever. Right. So how do you manage all those things?
It's a great question. It's very challenging to balance work and family life, no matter what you do. I really always try to put family first, unless it's absolutely inevitable. So I would say I'm pretty good at getting to most every event, the concerts, and occasionally I'll miss a baseball game when they're two a week. Occasionally I try to make it to all of them. I try to get the tennis matches that are, you know, makeable. I think you just got to be, you know, try to stay aware of your kid's schedule, for one, and just prioritize. Mm-hmm. You know, there are going to be times where it just can't happen, and you explain it to your kids, and then but I try to get to every single thing I can, and in general I'm able to balance pretty well.
So it sounds like you're pretty much, that's a two-way street though too, with the questions and whatnot, and just being honest and open. So there's students, yeah. Your kids are honest and open with you, but you guys are honest and open with them too, which is right. Really neat to see.
And I think it's good. My wife works too, and I think, you know, seeing whether it's one parent or both parents work hard and know that they're seeing them try to balance it, I think it, you know, instills a good work ethic. They understand. So they're pluses and minuses, you know, and having to make show them how you can balance your, things in life.
Now, I don't know if there's a there's a right or wrong way to do this or not, but and I'm just curious. It just popped into my head is how when your children were young and they weren't in school yet, how did you and your wife manage that? Did your wife take years off? Did she go back to work? Did they go to daycare? And I'm just curious because I see and you've talked a lot about how well adjusted they are and how well they are with handling, you know, being open and talking to you and feeling comfortable that way. So early years, thinking back that far, how did you guys handle that situation? Were they, you know, were they in daycare? Was it early? Was it later? How did that go?
Yeah, we did daycare. My wife always worked part time, so it wasn't full time daycare. We never had a nanny or anything like that. But we did daycare for the most part. And then when they started school, you know, it's carpooling, sharing with other people who, you know, work part time and so forth. Mm-hmm. We live in a very good, tight knit community and very family oriented community. So everyone's very supportive and out there to help each other. Mm-hmm. And it obviously becomes easier as your kids get older and they can be, you know, at home by themselves if they, you know, and get their stuff done. In the beginning, it was mostly daycare and family and friends.
Right. I think your favorite one there is trying to get in on the conversation. No, you're all right. No, it's okay. He wants your attention.
I was wondering if I was going to ask if you could hear that.
We can a little bit, but it's fine. Right. I'm sure the listeners understand you're a busy dad and you've got the dog, you got the kids. That's what we're about. So I think we'll get past this. No big deal at all. It seems to be so. It seems like it takes an army to get things done when getting all hands on deck and getting support systems. So,
no question.
And you guys are not from Michigan originally, correct? Or are you?
Well, my wife is.
Your wife is. Okay.
I'm from Philadelphia originally.
Okay. So
we go birds, right?
Do you have an extended family support system here at all on her side?
We do. We do. My wife's parents, obviously. So the kids get to see those grandparents, which is great. And then actually, my wife's brother and his family live about 0.3 mile away. So that's been phenomenal for many reasons. One is just having those extra hands for, you know, goes both ways. And just for our kids to grow up with some cousins right nearby, which is a lot of fun.
That's great. That's good to hear. That's really good to hear. You know, how do you manage your time with seeing your kids, seeing your side of the family? Do you get to get out there very often, again, with busy schedules and school?
Yes.
And do you guys get to get out there much or?
Well, not as much as I'd like. It's just, you know, it's tough. I have a very tight knit family. So I speak to my siblings and mom a lot. My dad passed away, sadly, but, so, you know, we probably see my mother, a few times a year. She's getting older, so it's harder for her to get out here. Mm-hmm. And then my siblings, we see at various events. So for instance, Thanksgiving at this point, that's a Reuben time. So we will travel out, east, mm-hmm. during the holiday and see the family. Often during the summer, we will as well, try to get out. My sister, has a place on Cape Cod. So she'll try to have everyone out there, and we'll have some time during the summer as well.
Well, that's good. That's good. And you know, being from Philadelphia, I'm sure you were happy this year with your football team.
Still riding high.
I think I saw some of your Facebook posts. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, especially because there's not a whole lot to root for here in Michigan as far as a professional football team.
Well, I think that when the Lions – at some point do win the Super Bowl, it'll be a similar feeling for Detroit fans. I mean, it will.
I wonder if we'll see it. I don't know. I'll ever see it, but maybe our kids will.
Right.
Who knows?
Well, it is incredible though, because I remember, you know, watching games with my dad, and it's fun because I've gotten at least my son, my daughter too, to some extent, but my son's definitely an Eagles fan, although he likes the Lions as well. So to get to share this with him was a lot of fun.
That's neat.
And I'm a little jealous that he got to see it at age 12 and I had to wait till I was almost 50, but besides.
Yeah. You know, I've taken on the whole Michigan State side of things for me, and that's kind of where I've gone. And
Right.
Hopefully we'll continue to see good things.
They're okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing all right right now. We'll see. Hopefully they can keep managing it well. So, but right. I was lucky enough when I was in school that I got to see a national championship. So that was a neat, different experience too. So yeah. I can only imagine how neat it is. And hopefully my daughter and soon to be here daughter will enjoy going to some of that stuff with me as well. So, yeah, so we're going to take a real short break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Rubin about some voice advocacy and voice health awareness. Welcome back here with Dr. Rubin talking about his family and the other side of Dr. Rubin being a father. Is he is a doctor and deals with voice and voice health and all the things that we may not know as the normal dads or normal people out there. And he's done some great things for me. I've had some issues with my voice in the past, and my voice is very important to me as an educator and now doing podcasts. So I thought I'd have him on so he can talk a little bit about, maybe tell us a little bit about one, just in general, what do we need to be aware of, or what do we need to do to help take care of our voices and make sure they stay healthy and they last us our life?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and I'm excited to answer it. So I think the first thing you have to do before anything else is just value your voice. And I think, as you know, perhaps as you've experienced, most of us take our voices for granted. We think it's only important for singers or actors, you know. And you know, you got to ask yourself, what would it be like trying to do your job or your passion? Hopefully they're both together, but some passions aren't a job, and some jobs aren't a passion. But what would it be like to try to do all that without a voice, or with a severely compromised voice? And, you know, teachers are a great example, Adam, because they get no voice training and they have one of the most vocally demanding jobs out there. So that's number one. And then, you know, you want to try to prevent a significant injury to the vocal folds. Are you going to go through life without being hoarse every now and then? No, probably not, right? But you want to try to avoid an injury that you can't recover from. Now, there's some injuries that you can recover from but might need surgery or might need some voice therapy. But there are some injuries that we still can't recover from, which is basically deep vocal fold scar. A vocal fold is another name for the vocal cord. So, you know, there's some simple things, obviously, some common sense things to avoid injury to your vocal cords. And you know, for one, just avoid shouting, right? Avoid yelling. You want to avoid talking in loud environments as best you can. But if you have to, like some killer environments are like going to weddings or bar mitzvahs or big parties, dances. There's so much loud background noise, you don't realize how loud you're talking. So there's a little trick where you can wear one earplug and you'll hear yourself a lot better and you won't talk as loudly. Now, people might not hear you as well because of that, but you'll protect yourself. Hydration is really important. You want to stay really hydrated. A good way to monitor that, believe it or not, is to look at the color of your pee. You want pale pee. You want it to be pale yellow. You don't want real dark yellow. That means you're dry and your urine's very concentrated. You know, there are other things common. I'm trying to think of the most common things. It's when you're lifting weights or you're exercising, you want to try not to bear down. You don't want to hold your breath. When you hold your breath, you're actually squeezing your vocal folds together very hard. So you want to avoid that. Whenever I see a big hulky guy in the weight room grunting really loudly, I want to give him my card because he's going to end up hurting himself one way or another. Obviously, you want to avoid smoking, right? That's bad for a number of reasons. I think those are some of the biggest ones. And then there are a lot of, you can actually look at our website, lakeshoreearnoseandthroat.com, and you can go to the Voice Center. There's a whole bunch of tips there for vocal health. And then the other thing is to recognize when you have a problem. So if you have any voice change that lasts more than, you know, a couple weeks, you got to get checked out. Okay. You have to get checked out. One, a lot of those periods of hoarseness, people write off to laryngitis, just inflammation. Well, typically most laryngitis doesn't last that long. Okay. Particularly for a virus or something like that. It's usually a sign that something more significant is going on. It could even be a sign of cancer. If you have a cancer in your vocal cords, it's going to present as hoarseness, and that's not going to go away. That's not to say most hoarseness over 2 weeks is due to cancer, but it's something to think about. Also, if you have an injury that is causing persistent hoarseness for that long, if you get seen and it gets addressed, it often can be fixed, often without surgical intervention, often with just some behavioral therapy. And then if it's something that does need surgery, like a polyp, you know, you've heard Adele had a polyp. If you wait too long, that polyp's going to cause a lot of damage to the other vocal cord, and the ultimate result might not be as good. So if you get it taken care of sooner rather than later, the chance of getting your voice back is much higher.
Yeah, no, that's, and I can say from firsthand experience that waiting too long is not always smart. And I had the same issue, or an issue where I noticed, and I think I waited over a year before I even came in and saw you. And, you know, I don't know, and you would know better than me, I don't know if that would have changed early on for me in my case, because I'm assuming there's case by case, but I'm assuming things could be much less drastic for me. So I'm a big, big, strong advocate whenever I hear people are hoarse or they're not talking normally for them, they're noticing a difference. I always tell my friends, especially my friends that are teachers, I say, if you're feeling that, go get scoped, go try and get, I said, go get scoped once a year. That's my personal opinion, but I wish I could live by that, cause I haven't done that in a while, but,
you're pretty good.
I think it's important. I think when you take a step back and look at it and go, how much do you use your voice in anything you do? It's important to make sure it stays healthy. I can't imagine not being able to communicate with my daughters. Right. And that I think is the biggest thing for me is, you know, I could deal with work, I think, but I don't think I could deal with not being able to talk to my daughters.
Yeah. You'd be amazed how many patients I see who come in because they can't sing to their kid at night. You know, they can't read to their kid at night without, you know, struggling a lot.
Yeah, I never thought of that. I mean, you're touching something sensitive there for me now.
Right.
That's horrible. Yeah, so hopefully, maybe if we and I can just get two people to go out and get their voice checked and hopefully save them from some, you know, it'll be a good direction forward, I think, because it's so important. Like I said, I tell my educator friends, go. If you don't feel like something's right, just go. The worst they can tell you is you're fine and then you're good.
Right, so, right. And yeah, there's... A change in voice quality is not normal. So if it's a change in voice quality that persists, don't assume it's normal. Don't assume it's laryngitis. It's okay. You know, listen, if you come home late from a party and you wake up the next morning, you're hoarse and you're hoarse and you can rest your voice for a couple of days and take it easy and it comes back to normal, that's fine. You know, you don't have to worry about it. But anything that persists, and right. Or particularly if you just can't, like if you're a teacher and you know you can't miss school, and you're struggling, get in and get seen. See if something can be done to help you so that you can recover your voice quickly and not struggle as much at work and cause yourself more damage.
Right, right. No, it's important. And I think taking a step back. And so what are your thoughts then on amusement parks and things like that? Because I'm assuming man, people there. And it's probably more common that people are doing more damage to their voice outside of that is my guess. But you never know. Could one thing affect it for life? I mean, is that a possible scenario?
Yeah, the answer to that is yes. But on the other hand, I don't want everyone out there living in total fear.
Go ahead. Right, exactly.
The majority of phonotraumatic, you know, trauma from using your voice, the majority of those will recover on their own, obviously, or my practice would be even busier than it is, you know? again, it's more the recovery, giving your voice a chance to recover after an event like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's important to know. Cause I think sometimes we're having so much fun or doing something with our kids and we don't right. think about it. It's just, we're in the moment, we live in the moment. And
yeah, just go to some kids' soccer games Actually, I got to be honest. Even in my kids' soccer games, I had a hard time controlling myself. You know, I had to set a good example, but it wasn't. Right. Yeah. I will tell you this too, by the way. You know, when you know a lot of parents' first response is to yell at their, you know, yell when something is done, kids shouldn't do, and when you're conscious of your voice and you decide you're not going to yell and you take a second, it's probably much better parenting at that point. You take a breath so you don't yell and then you can correct your kids in a more perhaps appropriate way.
Oh, even in education, I've found that, and it's gone both ways for me. Sometimes I've gone where I want to just Yes. Get my point across, but I've always found that I'm much more effective when I can lower my voice.
Yeah.
Talk softer. And because here, the thing, especially in teaching, is it forces them to listen.
No,
they have to listen versus you just, them just kind of like the Peanuts mom, you know, or was it the, yeah, it was the Peanuts where they hear wah, wah, wah. I mean, when you get above a certain volume, that's what they hear. But when you have to like talk to them and just lower your voice, it seems to be that, that it seems more effective on my end.
I agree. I think it's more powerful in a lot of those situations. And, yeah. And by the way, just one other thought is, particularly if you have a vocally demanding job, it's worth going and get some voice lessons. You can get speaking lessons. You know, it's worth getting some voice training, putting in the time and investment to do that. And there are other things, you know, you and I talked about for teachers. Obviously, getting a micro class is a career prolonger. And a lot of prescriptions for those, trying to get teachers, you know, teacher patients of mine, support to get a microphone in the class. I mean, that is a lifesaver, voice saver, I should say. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a lot of our listeners, I have a feeling that some of them are educators, a good chunk of them are. So that's good for them to hear, because it's important that they know those things. So kind of flipping it a little bit, is there things we can start teaching our children about using their voice correctly?
Well, unfortunately, children love to scream. So it's kind of hard. If someone figures out how to get them not to scream, let me know, because I'll tell my own, you know, I'll use it on my own kids. I think you could get the message across and talk to them about how important their voice is and they've got to take care of it. And, you know, their emotions are a little more volatile, particularly when they're younger. So, you know, you can talk them through all that when they're old enough, particularly if they like singing and things like that, you can get them singing lessons. If they're motivated, it's not too early to do that. So I think you can get across the same messages. Obviously, from an early age, you try to, you know, keep your kids off cigarettes and things like that. I mean, that's you try to keep them healthy, try to keep their diet good, all those kind of things, you know, keep their body healthy. And I think you can get the message across without being overbearing, but they are kids. They're going to scream, they're going to yell, they're going to run around, being crazy. And so there's so much you can do, but I will tell you, although majority of my practice are adults, I've had some kids with polyps and cysts and scar in the past, it's gone back and forth in terms of whether or not you operate on these lesions in kids. But I've had success for the appropriate cases, and if they're motivated and they're going to be able to be kind of quiet afterwards and get appropriate rehabilitation, you can. There are kids who will surprise you as young as 5 and 6, and they'll get it, and it's a valuable lesson for them. So, and by the way, I guess I do. Before I lose the opportunity, I do need to put one shameless plug out there, is that I did write a book.
You did, and we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, called The Vocal Pit Stop, Keeping Your Voice on Track. And it's a great book to have, and written in easy to understand terms, and just to give you a real sense of how your voice works and what can go wrong with the voice and what you should do if you suspect something is wrong and so forth. And that's available on Amazon.
I was going to say, where can they find it? And they just search for the title. You give the title one more time so they have it.
The Vocal Pit Stop, Keeping Your Voice on Track.
Okay. Yeah. So they can search that and hopefully you'll get some people that can learn a little bit more about their voice, which I think is very, very, very important. So my question is, just out of curiosity, how does somebody as young as 5 develop a polyp or needing surgery on their vocal cord? I hadn't heard about it. I don't know. Yeah. Didn't know about much about it until I had issues with my voice. So how does that happen that early?
Similarly to how it happens in adults, you know, it's the most common reason is going to be phonotrauma, you know, how they use their voice. Some lesions come around like vocal fold nodules from just repetitive, you know, misuse of the voice. Other lesions come around from one bad accident, you know, a big bad scream or yell or temper tantrum, and they have a bleed into the vocal cord and it develops into a polyp. So in a lot of these, you know, things in kids can be treated non-surgically if they're, you know, if they're motivated and mature enough to do some good voice therapy.
Okay, that's good to know. So We're going to take one more quick short break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Dr. Rubin about our tradition here that we've started on the Dad Experience, his three favorite films that he's most excited or was most excited to share with his kids. So stick around and we'll talk to him about that after the break. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. It's time now to hit one of my favorite points in our show and talking to dads about the three favorite films that they're most excited to share or have shared with their children. So, Dr. Rubin, do you have three films that or movies that you have shared with your children or are going to share with your children that you're just really excited to sit down and watch with and maybe see through their eyes what you saw when you were watching those films?
All right. Well, gosh, I was thinking back on this. There's so many good movies out there, and I think everybody at some point in their in his or her life has to see It's a Wonderful Life. I think that must for a great message and very uplifting a film. So I think that is a must. Now after that, I'm going to give you more kind of categories, I think, than specifics.
Sure.
I love seeing films with them that show someone with either a disability or a disadvantage, you know, persevering and, you know, letting them see the challenges and being inspired. So I think I would put films like My Left Foot. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm not sure about
it. Phenomenal. You should see that, Adam, in particular, actually.
Yeah.
We recently saw Wonder. I mean, you know, a movie like that, or you can put Matt, Elephant, all those movies are wonderful. Personally, I want my kids at some point to see Schindler's List, you know, see that kind of history. And with, you know, as a Jewish family, obviously, I think that's an absolute must. And then on the other side of things, I love laughing with my kids. So any movie that makes us laugh uncontrollably, I think is good. And I was thinking back, one movie I saw that I will at some point see with my kids is A Fish Called Wanda. That's one of the funniest movies I ever seen. But, you know, I'm going to get into trouble. I have watched Wedding Crashers with my kids and Austin Powers. And so there's nothing like, even if it's slightly inappropriate, there's nothing like laughing hysterically with your kids, you know, for any reason. And honestly, if there's any movie that's slightly inappropriate, I'd rather be watching it with them than them watching it on their own.
Right.
Does that answer your question pretty
no,
well?
No, it does. And I'll be honest, with everything so accessible the way it is now, it's almost like you have to, because if you don't, then there's not that communication and you can't explain, hey, this is not reality. This is
exactly
X, Y, or Z. So, no, I think that's great. And that's good to know. And, before I let you go, I want to talk about something that you've been doing for years, here in Michigan. And I know it's done obviously all over the world, but I know you've done some great things in the Metro Detroit area, but I wanted to talk about World Voice Day and let you kind of explain that and some things that you do to, help with voice advocacy here in Michigan.
Oh, great. Thanks. World Voice Day was started in Brazil initially to raise awareness for laryngeal cancer, you know, apropos to what we talked about earlier. If you have some hoarseness that's prolonged, it could be a sign of cancer of the vocal folds. And the advantage to that is that you can get seen early and things can be dealt with at an early stage, and you can avoid things like chemotherapy and radiation and have a good prognosis and even save your voice as best as possible. Whereas if you ignore these things and write off to laryngitis, things can become quite worse. And we talked about other reasons that you want to, be seen sooner rather than later for prolonged hoarseness. And basically World Voice Day has become a day to raise vocal health awareness, just to get that message across. Teach people how to prevent injury, how to recognize it, and how to you know, be appropriately evaluated if there's a problem. So it's up to the local voice docs and voice pathologists to promote the day and spread the word. So we do a big public service event. We put on a big free concert that you're very familiar with because you performed them. And if you know, he's an amazing performer. His story is very inspirational as well, so it fits great. So I host it, I do sing at it, My voice team sings because I work with some great, brilliant voice pathologists at the Voice Center. But mostly it's our patients singing. People have lost and recovered their voices, have had challenges that they persevered through. And they come, they tell their story, they perform. It's all different types of music. It's a free concert. And it's just an incredible night, as you can attest to. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing it now. I think this has got to be our 13th year of putting it on. It's going to be this year, May 16th. That's a little late, actually. Mm-hmm. It's because the actual day is April 16th, which usually interferes with Easter or Passover. But I did it late because it's when I could get into theater. And my son's bar mitzvah is April 28th. So I think my wife might get it before then.
I think that was a wise move.
It'll be at Stagecrafters, which is the Baldwin Theater in Royal Oak. And it'll probably start at 6:30 or 7 o'clock.
Awesome. Awesome. So
please come. It's a lot of fun.
That's great to hear. Well,
We got to get you back too, Adam.
So yeah, I'd be more than happy to come back and do something for you guys again. I'm always willing and always want to hopefully create some more awareness out there for, you know, voice advocacy, because I think I didn't know about it until I was 30 or almost 30. So it's right. Important. It's important.
Without a doubt. I'm looking at my calendar to make sure I said the right date.
No problem.
I said May 16th, right?
Wednesday. Yeah, you did. May 16th. So Wednesday, May 16th at Stagecrafters, you said, right?
Yeah.
All right. So can they find that on any website too, just to kind of...
Probably, we'll have it on our website, barring any unforeseen problems, lakeshoreyournoseandthroat.com. And that'll be there. And if there's any question, they can call our office at 586-779-7610, and they can get details there.
Okay. Then I'll put the links to the website for Lakeshore Ear, Nose, and Throat into the show notes. So when people get the episode, they can find it right there too. So, thank you so much for doing this and taking your time out of your busy schedule. And, you know, you've shared some great things for me, I know for sure. And I know some of our listeners that, that are really important, and some things that I'm chewing on that I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to put that on a list somewhere so I don't forget it. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
It's an absolute pleasure. Adam, you know, you're an inspiration to me, and it's a pleasure talking to you and caring for you and being a friend of yours. And I'm sure you're an amazing dad, and good luck with the second one.
Thank you.
That'll be great.
Thanks so much. Well, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
And as always, thank you, the listener, for tuning in to the Dad Experience. You can find the Dad Experience on the Apple Podcast app, the Google Play Store, as well as Stitcher. We are also a proud member of the Parents on Demand Network. The Parents on Demand Network have an app that has all of the episodes from the Dad Experience, but also has many other parenting podcasts. So check it out. There's some great things on there, and we know that our Dad Experience listeners would love to listen to some of those podcasts. So check it out, the Parents on Demand Network. You can also find us on Twitter at DadExpPodcast, as well as our Instagram feed, The Dad Experience, and join our group on Facebook, The Dad Experience. Also, check out our new improved website. You can find that at www.thedadexperiencepodcast.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned after this to hear about another podcast from the Parents on Demand Network.